We're now on the Healthcare Access Fund part of the agenda, and David Godfrey has some sheets that have been handed out.
Mr. Chair, members, you'll see a couple of sheets. One is a one-page, legal-size page. This, which says Healthcare Access Fund, House File 1362. This just summarizes the state of the fund with the passage of the Conference Committee report. It shows a balance on line 82 of $43.4 million at the end of fiscal year 13. And then in your packet, you should also have a three-page letter-sized document, which starts out with Healthcare Access Fund February Forecast 2009. What this shows is just the fund balance as of the February forecast. And you can see on line 62 of this, the balance was $235.4 million in fiscal year 11, but then that goes down to fiscal year 13 to $94.1 million. And then also on line 64 of that same page, you'll see the structural balance of the fund, and the structural balance is just defined as the amount of revenue in any given year versus the amount of expenditure in that year. And you'll see in fiscal year 13, the structural balance is a negative $74.6 million, which means that it's spending more that each year than the fund takes in. And then on the next page, the next two pages are a couple of scenarios. If you did a transfer in fiscal year 11, and on line, well, I guess it's a blank line between 53 and 54, you see the fiscal year 11 balance of $235.4 million being transferred out of the fund, and then you'll see that leaves a zero balance at the end of 11, but with a structural deficit of $288.8 million at the end of 11. And then if you go all the way to 13, you'll see the deficit in the fund is $141.3 million, total deficit with a structural deficit of $74.6 million. And I guess the next page is just simply if you did the $235.4 million transfer in 11 on top of what was in passed in House File 1362, you'll see the deficit in 13 is $192 million there. And I think the main point to be made on these two pages is just simply if one is to transfer the balance in fiscal year 11, that the tails in 12 and 13 would automatically go into deficit, and at that point is when statute calls for the reduction in eligibility to make the fund solvent again, and that if one was to take some money, you would need to refer back to the first page and look at the ending balance, which is $94 million. But you'll see even if you take that, the fund is still in structural deficit of $74.6 million at the end of 13. So with that, I'll take any questions, Mr. Chair.
Questions? Senator Berglund.
And Mr. Chairman and Mr. Godfrey, of course, what we would be talking about in terms of the various scenarios on these sheets would be one time.
Mr. Chair, Madam Chair, that's correct.
And so even if it were to happen, we are not structurally balancing our budget. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. That's Senator Murphy, or Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think that if I just want to check, if we transferred money and it affected the structural balance of the Healthcare Access Fund and therefore we had to reduce eligibility, would we then be in violation of ERA? If it happened within the terms of the stimulus?
Yes.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair? Mr. Godfrey? This, so that, yeah, it's showing the $50 million loan in there, but that's not, this isn't counting that getting paid back or any of the other transfers we've made out of the fund in the past. What, 6 years?
Mr. Chair, Representative Thiessen, it's showing the loan being made to the general fund. It doesn't show it coming back. And I've talked with finance about that. They said that once the Department of Health is able to start getting savings data to finance or MMB, that if that information on overall healthcare system savings shows that we are reaching our target by fiscal year 12 or 13, that they would include that then as being paid back on the fund balance sheet. But they just don't have the data for that right now.
Senator Berglund.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Thiessen, and if that were to occur, that also is one-time money.
Good point.
Okay, I don't see any other questions, so why don't we start with, is Liz Quam here? Well, it was Liz Quam from the Minnesota Ambulatory Healthcare Consortium. But I haven't seen her today.
Dave Renner.
Dave Renner's next. Dave.
Mr. Chair and members, my name is Dave Renner with the Minnesota Medical Association. Thanks for the opportunity to speak on the uses of the Access Fund. What I'd like to do is focus on two areas. One is related, as you can probably guess, on the source of the funding for the Healthcare Access Fund, but also talk about the use of the Access Fund and the work that many of you have been very interested in trying to protect the integrity of the Healthcare Access Fund. And just for a little bit of background, for those who have not were not around back in the early 90s, this Healthcare Access Fund was created in 1992 as part of what was then called Health Right, but it's now called Minnesota Care legislation. And I would argue one of the more controversial pieces of that legislation was the creation of the Access Fund, specifically related to the provider tax and how we fund it. I'm hoping you are all well aware that physicians continue to believe that the 2% provider tax is not the right way to fund this, and mainly because we would argue that it's a very selective tax, that it is a regressive tax, and most importantly, it does add to the overall health cost of health care. We have long argued that the issues of the uninsured healthcare access are societal problems, and one that we think all of society should be a part of that solution, including on how we fund that. So we think that the provider tax is too narrowly focused. Secondly, when you Department of Revenue, Minnesota Taxpayers Association, and others have looked at this and have indicated that this is a regressive tax. Matter of fact, it's one of our more regressive taxes. It is more regressive than the general sales tax. It does not at all indicate or tied to income, and it does hit those who use healthcare services more. So that's why you've heard some refer to this as a sick tax as well. But most importantly, there's a lot of debate about whether this tax is passed through to through health plans or not. The health plans will say that they built it into the fees, that it is passed through. Many providers will say that they have not seen those increases. Some will talk about the payments they get from out-of-state payers will reduce their payments by the 2% tax, knowing that it's they think it's been built in. But regardless of whether it is being passed through or not, this adds to the cost of health care. Looking at the numbers that Mr. Godfrey just went through, you can see that the provider tax raises in fiscal year 09, $461 million. It's going to be up over $500 million in a few years. Those are costs that get added on one way or the other to the cost of health care. And whenever we talk with legislators, we talk with consumers, we talk with employers, the one thing that we hear over and over and over again is we have to do whatever we can to control the cost of health care. So if there's any discussion of raising the tax, even a 1% increase, if you look at the numbers that it raises now, we're talking about $250 to $300 million additional cost to health care. Let me shift, if I may, to talk more about the issues of the integrity of the fund. Even though we continue to have concerns with the funding source, we have really focused for the last two or three years trying to say that we want to make sure we protect the Healthcare Access Fund. And we thank you and this conference committee for rejecting the proposal that came from the governor that would have eliminated the Healthcare Access Fund, shifted all that to the general fund. We have had great concerns, and physicians, while they don't like paying the tax, it makes them even more angry when they see they're paying the tax in, and then it's being transferred out to help balance the state's budget or used for sources other than what was originally intended. When the Healthcare Access Fund was created, it was created as a dedicated fund to fund the programs related to healthcare access. It was the biggest piece of that is the Minnesota Care program, but there is also some activities at the Department of Health. There's some activities in the Office of Rural Health. issues all related to healthcare access, and we believe that this fund should be continued to be used for those access-related programs. This is not a fund, we would argue, that was be used for whatever new healthcare idea that comes forward. And when we hear ideas of talking about, this was going back 3 or 4 or 5 years, elimination completely of the general assistance medical care program and putting that into the healthcare access fund. We see the governor's proposal of eliminating the inpatient coverage and, again, shifting the access fund out to help pay for that. That makes us concerned. When we hear issues raised even yesterday talking about maybe we should be using this to fund long-term care, we would argue that that was never the intent of the original dedicated fund, and we would strongly oppose those. This is not, we would argue, a health care slush fund. It is a fund that was dedicated for health care purpose. Again, I want to thank you all for a lot of the discussion in the last year about protecting the integrity of the health care access fund and a lot of criticism of the governor's proposal to transfer monies out. I will caution, however, that if we would argue that if you transfer existing general fund monies into the health care access fund, that also is not upholding the integrity of the healthcare access fund, and we would oppose those activities as well. We have talked about in the past about, as I mentioned earlier, a societal approach and the fact that we think that this should be funded through more broad-based taxes. From the Medical Association's point of view, we have strongly supported increase in alcohol taxes, increased cigarette taxes. Even though those aren't broad-based, they have a good public health purpose. We have also in the past supported increased income taxes if it's used to eliminate the provider tax. Even though physicians as a group would probably pay more in income taxes than other groups, our leadership has indicated that that makes more sense, that gets at the goals of a broad-based tax. This year we've also been looking at other ways to find funding, and if the provider tax is going to continue, which I guess we are assuming it will, at least in the near future, we would encourage you to look at taking that concept and expanding it to other professional services, some form of a sales tax on other professional services as well, at least as a way to broaden the sales tax. So Mr. Chair and members, we would strongly encourage you to help continue to work to maintain the integrity of the fund and use it for what was originally intended, and I'd be happy to try to answer any questions.
Questions for Mr. Renner. Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, Mr. Renner, and I was the one that proposed using it for the long-term care. Mm-hmm. I guess your comments caused me a little confusion because the original intent was for rural, was one of them was for rural health access programs or rural health care access. And I guess I'm a little confused about, is there a definition? Is it in statute what the healthcare access fund needs to be used for? Because around here we talk a lot about, and we went through this yesterday, the most vulnerable and where those dollars should go to. And I'm having a hard time separating the most vulnerable when it comes to our elderly in nursing homes and healthcare access and public assistance or adding to those roles. So I guess I'd like to know if, number one, if the definition for the where these funds should be appropriated, where they should go, if they're, that is in statute. And number two, is it just something that we've kind of evolved with over the years, that this is where it's supposed to be? Because I look at the expenditures on our sheet here, and, you know, some can be very debatable, just as much as using it for long-term care.
Mr. Chair and Senator Rosen, I wouldn't disagree with you that some of the uses on here are somewhat debatable. And to answer your first question, I'm not aware that it is defined in statute what the uses are. But at least from a historical perspective, I think it was very clear when this fund was created that it was focused, number one, on acute care, and there was no discussion of long-term care. And it was really focused on trying to address the low-income working Minnesotans. And that's where a vast majority of the funds in the Healthcare Access Fund are used to fund the Minnesota Care Program and try to build that bridge between our lowest income, Medicare and medical assistance and general assistance medical care, and the private sector. And Minnesota Care, I think, has been a very successful program, in it, which many of us have strongly supported. Our concern, again, I don't think there was ever an intent and discussion, and I know Senator Berglund was involved in those discussions when this was established. Long-term care was never part of the discussion, and we think that would be a drastic change of what the intent of this fund has been.
Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And then, Mr. Renner, on the sheet that Mr. Godfrey gave us as far as the forecast, and I know that for the healthcare access, we do not have to structurally balance. We passed that where we have to structurally balance the general fund four more years out. Here, it's, we've got a balance after our loan in 2013 of $94 million, and it, obviously it's going down quite a bit, and I would assume that at some point, has anybody figured out those figures four more years out, what's going to happen to the fund, and how do we take care of this issue of the low-income working definition that supposedly is in there that I still struggle with a little bit, because I believe that if you're using it in healthcare access, which is obviously our elderly receive healthcare access in their nursing homes, you know. So my question is, what's going to happen when this fund falls off the cliff? And obviously, it's going to at some point, Mr. Godfrey.
Mr. Chair and Mr. Senator Rosen, we share that concern. I mean, when we're looking at these numbers, if you're looking at the growth of the structural imbalance, my estimates would be by fiscal year 2014, we are probably in deficit. So that makes us even more concerned about adding new obligations to the fund. Our hope, and I think many of the around the table's hope, is that the health reforms that we passed last year will start to slow the growth of that health care and will have some impact on the out years. But a fear that we have had for many years is that as this fund starts to run dry, the pressure will be to say, well, let's raise the provider tax. I would argue again on the back to the provider tax. In Minnesota, we have historically had a tradition, at least on the sales tax, of not taxing necessities. We don't tax clothing. We don't tax food. We would argue that health care is also a necessity, and we don't think it makes sense to be adding a tax on the health care services, especially when one way or the other these do get passed on to consumers and the patients. And as I said earlier, at the time we're trying to control health care costs, we're adding additional costs to those. So we share your concern about the long-term stability of the fund, but we think by adding new spending obligations that will even make that problem worse.
Senator Berglund.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Rosen, I think there's a couple of things to think about when you think about the long-term future of the Healthcare Access Fund. And one is, you know, will we still be in a recession? And will we still have as many people demanding access to the fund for enrollment? I think the second thing that you need to think about is what, if any, changes would be happening at the federal level. And we don't know that yet, but we certainly would know if there's going to be anything before 2014.
Senator Huntley.
Senator Sharon.
Thank you, Mr. Renner. You mentioned something I'd like you to expand on a little bit. You talked about your association that you represent opposing moving any of the money from this account into the general fund to cover general purposes when it's paid from a narrow tax base. And you said that you also would be opposed to the use of general fund revenues coming into Minnesota Care. I did not understand that, or if that's not what you said, would you clarify what you were saying?
Mr. Chair,
to?
Mr. Renner.
Senator Sharon, I apologize. Let me clarify. What we would have concern with is moving programs that have historically been funded out of the general fund to now have them funded out of the access fund. And that's the discussion that's been talked about with potentially with GAMC. So that's our concern.
Thank you.
Senator Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Renner, I worked with Senator Sharon this year on a piece of legislation that we shaped called the Healthy Communities Act. And in our efforts to draft that legislation, there was some discussion by the public health groups that were working on that of adding funding sources to the Healthcare Access Fund and then broadening the purpose. So they were there very interested in talking about the health of the people and public health and investing in the statewide health improvement program, adding a cigarette tax or adding a tax on sugared soda, for instance. And I was reticent about that. And so you and I talked about this just a little bit ago. I want to know if the MMA has a position regarding the Healthcare Access Fund and additional or different revenue sources as a means to expand the base of funding. And then if that happened, would there be an opening to talk about funding other healthcare services?
Mr. Renner.
Mr. Chair and Representative Murphy, maybe I'll answer that in two parts. First of all, as I think I mentioned earlier, we are very strong supporters of raising the cigarette tax, alcohol taxes. There's been talks of, you know, other fast food taxes, those types of things, and mainly because of for the public health reasons. Again, it doesn't go with our principles generally are about broad-based taxes. We think broad-based taxes are the best way to go, but in those situations, there is a definite public health advantage making those products more expensive. So we are strong supporters of those, and we'll continue to push for those. We've not had a discussion of whether those monies should be put into the Healthcare Access Fund. So I don't know if we would have a problem. I think the only concern that we would have, again, is as you start broadening it more and more, you lose the original intent. And does something get added to the fund that results in us losing completely the original intent? But we are strong supporters of the SHIP money that was passed last year. That came out of the Healthcare Access Fund. That's one of those issues that may not have been in the original intent, but it was something the legislature decided, the governor signed. So I don't know if that completely answers your question.
Senator Berglund.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Murphy, in the past when there have been proposals to add cigarette tax to the Health Care Access Fund to pay for some new obligation, the real concern that I have is that the cigarette tax doesn't grow. In fact, it tends to go the other way. And so then if you're adding an obligation and paying for it with the cigarette tax, and that source of revenue is declining, then you're indirectly obligating the provider tax to pay for something new in the future. And I think we need to be really careful about that.
Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Renner, I'm going to put you on the spot. because obviously this fund is going to go off the cliff. And so we need to look at the benefit set or the benefit packages that are offered to these low-income working people. And in your opinion, where do you think that we're a little generous? And you can compare that with perhaps what other states, I don't know if other states have programs like this, but obviously we do have a generous benefit set, and I'm just wondering where you would like to see some reform done to mitigate this jumping off the cliff. Instead of a 30-foot drop, it's going to be, you know, a 2-foot drop.
Mr. Renner.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Rosen, I may not be able to give you as specific an answer as you'd like. We have been looking at that issue as well, and we have been supportive. Last year there was legislation. Part of the reform bill was to try to help define what an essential benefit set should be. We have tried to do that within our association over the last 15 years, two or three different times, to try to get down to What do we think are essential benefits? Very clearly, I think the direction you all went last year and one that we strongly support is trying to influence or emphasize more prevention and primary care through our healthcare homes concepts. And I firmly believe that that will result in us reducing costs. If we better coordinate care, if we can, especially in secondary prevention, try to eliminate the need for additional hospitalizations, additional procedures, additional surgeries, we will save significant monies. What we have said on behalf of our in relation to whether we should be cutting benefits, whether we should be cutting eligibility, if we get into those discussions, our board and our leadership has very clearly said it is better to cover more people with less benefits than it is to cover less people with more benefits. Again, it's not a specific answer to your question, but we have struggled with the same issues that you are all struggling with. And we think that if we are going to look at first, number one, we think we should cover as many people as possible. And number two, we need to change our incentives and try to focus on prevention and primary care.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Rosen.
Mr. Ritter. And then, so in your opinion or the association's opinion, do you feel that our benefit set is probably more on the excessive side and we could be, if we back down on that eligibility or the benefit set, that we could perhaps broaden the net more?
Mr. Chair and Senator Rosen, I don't think I can give you an answer. We don't have it. We have not specifically looked at this one and said, here's where we would cut benefits. The Minnesota Care program, many would argue, and I think we would agree, that is in a sense cut back in the because we have the $10,000 cap on inpatient hospitalization. So in some ways it is less coverage than you would get in the private market.
Okay, Mr. Chair.
Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Renner, have you and your association talked about a increase in the provider tax or a temporary increase in the provider tax to help the cliff?
Mr. Chair and Senator Rosen, we have. And matter of fact, again, this year, we took back to our board a very directed question to them saying, look, we are looking at some very severe cuts. Why do you give us direction? Where do you want us to go? We asked them a whole series of questions about where do we cut and where do we raise revenues. The message we got back, not only from our leadership, but in a survey we did of our membership, was number one, it needs to be a combination of new revenues and cuts. And in the new revenues, as you can probably guess very clearly, there was overwhelming support for tobacco and alcohol taxes. But in the next area, they told us that we should be focusing on, if we're looking at expanding new revenues, would be to expand sales tax to services. We asked them about income taxes, and again, we're not actively supporting income tax, but we have very clearly said that we think an increased income tax would make more sense than raising the provider tax. So we tried to ask them, we tried to say, here are the types of cuts we're looking at, and they very clearly came back and continued to say that the provider tax is not the right way to go.
Senator Berglund.
Mr. Chairman, I just wanted to point out to members of the conference committee that the Senate did pursue a limited benefit set this year for our programs. And we took what they're doing in Idaho as our model because we knew they at least had gotten a waiver. And you do have to get a waiver to change your benefit set. And the Department of Human Services could come up with no savings. And in order to get a waiver, you actually have to be able to show CMS that you do have some savings. I think when we think about that issue, we need to be a little bit careful that we can't just do whatever we want. And I also do think we need to be careful when we talk about the program for people without children, because we know that we do have a number of individuals in Minnesota Care that if they had their benefits drastically changed or had their eligibility changed, that we would see those folks showing up in our MA program. They would prefer to be working and not apply for disability, but if they didn't have Minnesota Care available to them, they would be in a situation where they'd have to give up working to apply for disability. So Minnesota Care, in my view, has always been a program that supports people who are working. And we want as many people in our state to be working as possible. And if we remove that support for people that otherwise marginally might not be able to work, we need to remember we will have fewer people working.
Representative Thiessen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Two questions. One for Mr. Godfrey, and I don't know if you have the information, but the deficit that we should be showing up in fiscal year, presumably in 14 now, has there been a trend in terms of, as new forecasts come out every year, about what the bottom line looks like in the out years in healthcare access fund? I mean, my impression is that the Department of Human Services always overestimates spending in the healthcare, in Minnesota Care, and so we see numbers like this, and when the new numbers come out, the date that it goes into the red gets pushed off into the future. Is that accurate?
Mr. Godfrey.
Mr. Chair, Representative Thiessen, I can't speak specifically to the expenditure side. I do know that I've looked at in the past the trend in revenue that is projected. And traditionally, the Healthcare Access Fund forecast has always underestimated the amount of revenue coming in.
Okay.
And I can't tell you off the top of my head exactly what the difference is, but it's significant in terms of it does show up. The amount of revenue we get in traditionally is greater than the amount of revenue forecasted.
Okay, thank you. And one other question, Mr. Chair, this is to Mr. Renner. You know, one way to look at this, and I don't know if you've had any discussions or analysis within your organization, is kind of thinking without the Healthcare Access Fund and without the provider tax, what do we have, 120,000 people in Minnesota Care, roughly? Presumably a good portion of those wouldn't have any health care at all. They'd be showing up at your clinics and you'd get no payment for them. Mm-hmm. In some sense, the Healthcare Access Fund is really money that comes to us and then goes right back out to your members. And I'm just wondering if you've ever done any analysis of who wins. I mean, really, in some sense, what your problem is it's a cost shift among your members. So people that are serving higher Minnesota Care populations are winners because they pay in a certain amount but get a lot more back from it. And some of your members are losers because they pay in but they don't serve as many public clients. Mm-hmm. And have you done any analysis of who those winners and losers are and what the percentages are on each side?
Mr. Chair and Representative Thiessen, first of all, let me say we have looked at the issues of what would happen if Minnesota Care weren't here, and very clearly we continue to be a strong supporter of the Minnesota Care program. We're not advocating that we get rid of the program or we eliminate it. We did some analysis about 3 or 4 years ago, looking not who within our membership are winners and losers, but just as in aggregate, how do physicians do versus how much they pay in versus how much comes back through payments from Minnesota Care. And very clearly, generally, physicians did better in the sense that they were getting more back through coverage than they would have paid in, which is one of the reasons why we continue not to like the fund, the provider tax. We have not been actively trying to eliminate it the last few years because partly political realities
we
as well,
appreciate that.
but instead focused on saying we want to make sure that this continues to be used for what was intended. There are absolutely winners and losers. There are, you know, if you don't do much public programs and you're paying more in than you get out. Generally, that probably tends to be more primary care is probably more of a winner, but they probably see more of these folks in some of the other procedurals, but that's not, we have not done that kind of analysis.
No, and Mr. Chair, there's a comment, and a winner in the sense that they get paid, although underpaid.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman, and Representative Thiessen, as we've just been talking, yes, underpaid to the point of about a third of what the private market in many of these cases are paying.
Okay, any further questions? I don't see any, so thank you, Mr. Renner.
Thank you, members.
Liz Quam is here now.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I am Elizabeth Quam. I'm representing the Minnesota Ambulatory Healthcare Consortium. The physician members of MAC provide safe and lower cost alternatives for patients within ambulatory surgery and outpatient imaging settings. My employer is Center for Diagnostic Imaging, and for some of you younger folks, you might want to know that while Senator Berglund was part of the Gang of Seven, I was running around the state as a representative of the health department talking to the regional coordinating boards about how we were going to eliminate all uncompensated care through the Healthcare Access Fund. I'm not going to reiterate what Mr. Renner said. And Mr. Rivness is coming after me to talk a bit about the business case about the provider tax. But I did, just because I have worked a lot over the years with folks who do not have health care coverage, a lot of them in the rural areas. I just wanted to make sure that all of you are aware that, as has been the case since the Healthcare Access Fund was established, the majority of the uninsured and underinsured Minnesotans will never qualify for Minnesota Care. Many of these non-qualifiers are farmers and other self-employed individuals and small business owners and their employees. We have more and more, if you talk to any of the health plan representatives in the room, you'll find that those small employer, sometimes with individual policies, so there's no COBRA with it, those are the folks that are dropping off the health care insured roles now. And I think disproportionately, we're probably seeing it in the rural areas first. We'll know that more in about a year. But then once COBRA is out for those folks in the Twin Cities who work for larger companies, they're going to feel the same thing, especially for the next year when unemployment is set to balloon to at least 10%. I would just ask you, even though they are not the subsidized enrollees that you have to figure out how to cover right now, I'd ask you not to tax Minnesotans further who are unemployed or will become unemployed, or those of us providers who are responding to their needs as well. There is a great deal of uncompensated care going on because there's a gap between those that have Minnesota Care coverage and those that have good coverage. With that, I'll conclude my comments.
Okay, any questions for Ms. Quam? Don't see any, so thank you for your testimony.
Trying to cover small businesses.
We have Mary O'Connor. Welcome to the committee, and would you state your name for the tape?
Thank you. My name is Mary O'Connor. I live in Brooklyn Center. Mr. Chair and members, health care is the responsibility of families, not government. Families do a much better job of taking care of their health than government does. The reason health care is so expensive is because of the involvement of government over the years. Government should gradually get itself out of health care. Stop regulating health plans, hospitals, and nursing homes. Allow competition to come back into health care. Then costs will come down. Let families find their own doctors and dentists and pay their own bills. Health insurance is not needed except for hospitalization. Government and insurance companies have become middlemen between family members and their doctors. These middlemen demand their payment. That is why healthcare is so expensive. We can't just pay our doctor for their service. We have to pay government and the insurance company, too. Please get government out of healthcare and allow costs to come down.
Any questions for Ms. O'Connor? Cindy, thank you for your testimony. Did Watson talk earlier? Jonathan Watson?
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Jonathan Watson. I'm with the Minnesota Association of Community Health Centers. This is 17 federally qualified health centers, both in the urban and rural areas of Minnesota. We serve about 180,000 patients a year, 40% of them uninsured. My purpose here today is to advocate for keeping the Health Care Access Fund intact. And principally, my rationale for that is we receive about a $2.5 million subsidy out of the Health Care Access Fund to the community health centers in the state per year, this appropriation. What we do with these funds is exactly what the Health Care Access Fund is titled to do. We provide increased and enhanced access to care for low-income Minnesotans, particularly the uninsured that we're continuing to see. Yeah. I know that $2.5 million isn't a lot in the big budget discussions you're having here, but our community health centers have operating margins of less than 1%, so this $2.5 million has a profound impact on our ability to deliver care. Let me just give you some examples of what we use this money for to give you a sense of your return on investment. Specifically, we use these funds for what we call enabling services. These are services that we use to break down cultural or socioeconomic barriers to care on behalf of our patients. 30% of our patients would rather be served in a language other than English, and 90% of our patients are below 200% of poverty. So these services are in great demand at the health centers. transportation services, language interpretation, and patient education we use these funds for. Above and beyond these enabling services, we use these funds over the last couple years to increase mental health services and hours, purchase dental equipment, partially fund care management programs for those with chronic diseases such as diabetes, and lastly, funding some of our community health workers that are in the communities working with our populations. So our goal with this $2.5 million is one, to expand access, two, to keep patients healthy, and lastly, consequently, keeping costs down, both for the Medicaid budget and for the community health centers. This is very timely money for us, as you can imagine. There are three threats that we're facing right now. Two are real, one is potential. The first one is we do see a year-to-year about a 10% natural rate of growth in the uninsured as employers continue to shed coverage for their employees. So we do historically have seen a 10% increase. We expect another 10% increase in this year as well. The second threat is the real fact of the economy going south. We did an analysis of the zip codes that we serve in the state. We're only in about 8 or 9 counties throughout the state, but we serve 50% of the zip codes throughout the state of Minnesota. I know I've talked to you in the past about folks with living in the exurbs and suburbs coming to the Phillips neighborhood, for instance, for care, because that's the only place that the uninsured, one of the few places the uninsured folks can go and have affordable health care. The last threat is indeed the potential cut of the governor's proposals, in particularly around Minnesota Care and the dental benefit. In talking with one of the CFOs of our community health center, particularly the dental benefit would be catastrophic. We would be looking at least 10,000 additional patients of our current patients that would lose coverage and then come to us as uninsured because they want to maintain their relationship with their medical home, the community health center. So regardless of what we have result in this session, that we were going to see some tremendous growth in the uninsured, upwards of 20%, depending on how it all shakes out this year. So I urge you to maintain the health care access funds as it is. It's a worthy investment with definite returns, particularly for low-income populations. That's all I have, and I'm available for some questions.
Any questions for Mr. Watson? Let me ask one. The people driving in from the suburbs that do not have insurance, do you have any figures on those that are trying to avoid their deductible portions, you know, the $5,000 or $10,000 deductible?
Mr. Chair, I don't have any specific ones in the Minneapolis-St. Paul area. I know I'm talking to the clinic, but Grand Marais Sawtooth Mountain Clinic, they estimate about a third of their uninsured fit into that category where they're trying to get around their deductible.
And how do you usually have a sliding fee payment scale based on people's income, I presume?
Correct. Mr. Chair, we have a sliding fee schedule for taking into account their income and their family size.
I don't see any other questions, so thank you for your testimony again.
Thank you.
And let's see here. Mr. Rivness. Welcome back to the legislature.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the conference committee. My name is Phil Rivness, a former member of this body. In fact, I was a part of the discussions when Minnesota Healthcare Access Fund was set up and its funding mechanism was determined. So that goes back some years. First of all, I want to compliment the conference committee at making certain that the healthcare access committee survived in the form of the conference report. I think that was really critical. Something MMGMA that I represent, which has over 800 members across the state of Minnesota administering clinics large and small, strongly believed in. We also strongly want to compliment you on holding eligibility as well as you did. Those are two very important issues to us. One of the points I'd like to make just ever so briefly is I happen to believe that the 2% provider tax and the gross premium tax is more than sufficient to keep this fund in the black. In fact, it was, as you may know, it blinked down to 1.5% for a short period of time. But one of the lines on this spreadsheet, I'm looking at the long one now, that has been shrinking, but not because of anything other than transfers to the general fund. And that's the first item, and that talks about balance forward. And as you folks, many of you remember, I think starting in 74 and through 76, I may be a little off on my years, more than $400 million was transferred out of the health care access fund to the general fund. Otherwise, that number would still appear up here in a balance forward. Secondly, if you compare line 20, which is total resources available, $835 million in 2013, to all the uses for Minnesota Care on line 48, which is $664 million, even with all those transfers out, it's more than adequate to cover all the needs of Minnesota Care. So if as I know there's been many efforts on the part of leadership here, if we could resist those transfers, that skimming of surpluses from this fund and putting it into the general fund, or conversely, taking obligations of the general fund and shifting those into the health care access fund, this fund would be not only solvent, it would be solvent well into the future. So I think what we're trying to do is look at this spreadsheet saying, whoops, this could go over the cliff. But it's, again, not going over the cliff because of revenue. Just look at line 8. That's the provider tax revenue. Even on this spreadsheet, it shows it going from $428 million in 08 to $563 million in 13. That's a 30% increase in revenue from the provider tax without changing the rate. That's a substantial increase. It would more than offset increases in costs in the fund. But I would challenge you to look at some of the other items in here that sometimes probably shouldn't be in here. Expenditures chargeable back to state agencies. I'm not going to pick on anybody on this list, but there's a lot of things here that don't have anything to do with subsidizing the cost of insurance for the uninsured. So this, I would say that if you just stuck to the sources of revenue, and that would be balance forwarded, the premium tax, gross premium tax, and the provider tax at 2%, and this would be a very solvent fund if it stuck to its primary mission. So I would have you look at that. I'd talk about that a little bit. If you had to look to alternative revenues, which you shouldn't have to in on this spreadsheet, then I would ask you to resist looking to expanding the provider tax. It's one, as Mr. Renner has pointed out, many people in healthcare have sort of finally taken a final gasp. When we couldn't do anything about it in the big good years, it's tough to do anything about it in the bad years, the tough years, and we recognize that. But the one thing that I want to have everybody think about is sometimes when you think in terms of like a 1% increase, that sounds really minor. Like, oh, it'll only be a 1% increase to take the provider tax from 2% to 3%. That's a 50% increase. That's not a 1% increase. To go from 2 to 3 is a 50% increase. And what is even more, I've talked to tax committee chairs in the House and the Senate about this, and I think they've said to me that they thought about this a little different after our conversation. What's so different, our gross income tax, by the way, as you may know, our income tax rate in Minnesota is 9.8%. I think most everybody agrees it's a little too high. It's probably third or fourth high in the country. And I know that Governor Plenty proposed eliminating it altogether. Our tax chairs have looked at what we might be able to do to mitigate that. But if you take an identical company, one with $10 million in revenue that's health care and one with $10 million in revenue that's non-health care, the problem with the difference in those two scenarios is the non-health care company pays that rate on net profit. You get to deduct, as well you should, all of your expenses for facilities and manufacturing inputs, if that's what you have, and personnel and all of that. And then what remains, if you're lucky, if you're a really good company, is about 5% of revenue left as profit. So in a $10 million company, that would be roughly $500,000. It's against that number, then, that you multiply 9.8%, which is the corporate tax rate. That comes up to $49,000. A lot of money. We want to reduce it, right? Take the healthcare company. Now you still have $10 million in revenue. The only book of business that we don't have to pay the provider tax on is Medicare. So let's assume you do a 15% Medicare. You take the $10 million, subtract $1.5 million, you're left with $8.5 million. Now you multiply $8.5 million times 2%, the provider tax. So instead of multiplying it against profits, you multiply it against revenue. So now 2% of $8.5 million is $170,000, not $49,000. You still have to pay the corporate tax on top of that. So this is a huge thing. There's debate from time to time how much of this gets passed through, whatever. I can tell you from our members' standpoint, not very much of it. So I would caution you to look at this. We've advocated for a long time. If you ever have to go beyond 2%, then look at some other, you know, broaden this, do whatever you want to do. But this is really a big hit on health care, folks. And it came as a surprise to some members of the Senate Tax Committee that clinics pay taxes. We pay property taxes. We pay corporate income taxes. We're a little different in hospitals in that sense. And so be very, very careful about contemplating an increase in the provider tax, because it's a major hit on those organizations out there that are trying to work with all the communities across Minnesota to keep people healthy. They employ a significant workforce. And this would have a big hit on them if we ever considered changing from 2% to some higher number in terms of the provider tax. So those are my comments today.
Questions? Senator Berglund.
Mr. Chairman and Mr. Rivness, the cuts that we've made so far to providers in our bill, I'm wondering if you anticipate providers would be absorbing those or whether they would be making layoffs in their clinics?
I would say they would probably be, they can't absorb them. I can just tell you, I'm a clinic administrator, and not wanting to hold my clinic up too much, but we've already frozen salaries for the year. We've indicated other cutbacks that we've had to do. We're trying not to lay anybody off because that degrades service, but at some point that's exactly what we would have to do. Those are the stories I hear across the state of Minnesota. So we're doing our best. We knew that the cuts could be deeper than what were put on the table by this conference committee. We didn't push back much on those, as you know. We kind of wish that some of them couldn't be passed on to us in the form of the ratable reduction to PMAP. It'll have a very direct impact on how we can provide service and what kind of staffing we can afford.
Senator Berglund.
Mr. Chairman and Mr. Rivness, are your clinics concerned at all about the loss of federal funding the bill represents or could represent?
Mr. Rivness.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Berglund, you're going to help me a little bit more with that. Senator,
well, Berglund. Every Medicaid dollar we cut for the next 18 months, we lose $1.50 in federal funding, and after that we lose $1 of federal funding.
Well, you know, as Mr. Renner pointed out, I guess, yeah, there's a concern on our membership. One of the things that happens is there's some people, especially rural clinics, that are far more vulnerable for cuts in MA than are some especially suburban clinics. Urban clinics have the same dilemma. We all have some exposure. So, yeah, there is a real concern there. Every one of our members that I'm aware of, including my organization, provides uncompensated care when necessary. We probably aren't as approached with people without insurance as much as hospital ER departments, so they would have a much more direct hit. But no, we're concerned. There's no doubt about it. That's why our number one goal this year was maintaining eligibility. That we've led with that all session long.
Okay, well, thank you. And I know the Hospital Association, that's their number one priority as well.
Exactly.
It looks like the dentists are ready to go here.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. I appreciate the opportunity to make a short statement. My name is Dick Dirks. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Dental Association. The Minnesota Dental Association represents over 80% of the dentists in the state. I would like to support the comments that have been made here by the other groups this morning. The dentists of the state of Minnesota strongly agree with all the comments and positions stated by the Minnesota Medical Association. Just in brief, to be on the record so that you know that the dentists of the state of Minnesota strongly do support those statements, we strongly oppose the elimination of the health care access fund. We think the record keeping, the accountability, the integrity of those funds is best maintained by maintaining the fund, and that that's the best way to help ensure that the funds are used for health care as originally intended. Another aspect of the problem that has been of concern to us is the fact that the provider tax is such a hidden tax to the people who pay it, the patients who pay it. And then if you eliminate the health care access fund on top of that, it becomes even more hidden yet and even more hidden to you. So we think for the accountability, for the ability to keep it dedicated to health care and to keep the visibility of the tax there, that it's very important to not eliminate the health care access fund. We also don't believe that the provider tax should be increased. It does increase the cost of health care. It is a tax on the sick, and it's a major collection problem for the providers also. So just wanted to underscore all of the comments that have been made this morning.
Well, thank you, Mr. Dirksen. And some of us understand that the dentists pay more in the provider tax than they ever get back with Minnesota Care patients. So
the dentists
still supporting it.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Yes, the dentists do dislike the fact that they pay in a lot, and then the money gets transferred to the general fund. It doesn't go back into dental care. The dentists would like to see that all of the money that is paid by dentists goes back into dental care if there's a way to arrange that. And we don't believe that that's the case right now. Too much gets transferred out and used otherwise.
Senator Berglund.
Mr. Chairman, I'd just like to make a comment for the record, and that is that all of the transfers that show up on the sheet that's been referred to, all of them are transfers for Minnesota Care purposes. The major transfer is because we apply Minnesota Care to Medicaid, and then we pay providers back for the state share. That was a mechanism that was used a few years ago to help balance the budget. We keep the federal share in the general fund. We pay for Minnesota Care's fair share of the critical access dental program, and that is a transfer to the general fund because that's the only way they can administer the critical access dental program. We have a limited tax credit for folks to sign up for Section 125 plans, and then we pay for our share of the Department of Human Services computer systems for the administration of Minnesota Care. So years ago, there was a transfer that went out to the general fund in 2003 to balance the budget, but that was a limited time transfer, and it's over. Not to happen again, if I can help it.
Well, Senator Berglund, that would be two of us. We have one more person, Jim Meffert Nelson. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Jim Meffert, and I'm the executive director of the Minnesota Optometric Association, and I would like to thank you for that commitment on behalf of our members. Over 90% of them provide services under the state's public programs, and they do that because it's a public commitment that they make to providing clear vision and healthy eyes to the to all populations in our state. This is a increasingly difficult thing to continue to do. Another reason they do it is because they know full well that in order for people to improve their situation and get off the program, they need to be able to see clearly. They need to be able to perform well in job interviews, which is a goal, and having clear vision and healthy eyes is a critical component to that. So they do remain part of the program. Let me give you a little perspective of what they're facing right now and what they see and what I hear every day about the impact of the situation now and the perspective of the Access Fund and some of the discussion that's been going around. Our rates are the same as Mr. Renner has described and the MMA has described over the years. Median rates from 1989. There was a 3% increase a number of years ago. The bill that the governor is looking at, I believe, takes that away, so it's basically 1989 median rates. It's interesting, too, and I have to throw this in, that of the rates and the rebasing discussion that goes on, the providers under the fee-for-service program are the only group that somehow gets left out of that discussion. That gets into some of the discussion of the actual rates, and maybe we can look at some other ways of resolving that that challenge also. But that's something that our doctors very much look at. They see that they're providing services, they're delivering services to people, and the cost for them to provide that service certainly changes, but they're not seeing that in what they're actually paid for doing that. In addition, along with the rates, there's another thing that's had an impact recently that they look at, and that's the inability to collect the copays, which there was some limited to discussion about. One of the particular challenges with that is the general assistance medical care copay of $25 in eyeglasses has left a potential reimbursement rate to find a pair of frames for $2.90. We're still looking for a pair of frames that we can find for $2.90. The frustration that's come back from our doctors, frankly, is when there's talk about shifting funds, and I appreciate that we haven't shifted funds from the access fund to the general fund for some years, but when this discussion takes place and when there's talk about going back and forth, our doctors who are paying the provider tax and look at this fund as delivering healthcare services are finding it more and more difficult to actually deliver care, deliver eyeglasses to this particular population. That's the broad perspective that they see and that they look at when they see these public programs. They definitely want to continue, obviously, to provide these services, but they find it more and more difficult as we go. I have to reflect on one conversation also that I had recently, and it was with Lois Quam, who was part of the discussions that you were part of, Senator Berglund, the Access Commission, and talking about how the commission was and the Access Fund was designed to subsidize care for the working poor, and that's what the Minnesota Care Program was particularly designed to do. Along with finding better or good systems of care for this population also, and trying to find ways to leverage dollars into structures that provide access. And I think some of that may get to what Mr. Watson talked about earlier with making sure that we have not only financial access but geographic access to these particular populations. And so I wanted to just bring that perspective on behalf of our doctors that it's becoming more increasingly difficult. And as there's discussions of the provider tax going up or shifts out of the access fund and programs shifting around to a group that's trying to stay in the program, that's trying to deliver care to the broad population, it's becoming increasingly difficult to do that. So anything that can be done ongoing to help maintain their involvement in the program would be greatly appreciated. Thank you.
Questions? I don't see any, so thank you for your testimony.
Thank you.
And I think we'll be adjourning in a minute or two, and we'll be at the call of the chair tomorrow. So any of you just want to throw in something?
Is there anybody here to testify in favor of an increase?
Pardon me?
Is there anybody here to testify in favor of an increase in the provider tax?
The Hospital Association actually did.
They did earlier?
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
So with that, the meeting is adjourned, and we will meet tomorrow at the call of the chair.
Oh. Yeah. Oh.